What's up, ladies and gentlemen? This is the RSN podcast. This is Rich. We got Sal on one of the sides.
Yep, what's up?
We got Nick.
What's going on?
So today's topic of the podcast is the rise and fall of Extreme Championship Wrestling. Sal, when you hear ECW, what comes to your head?
The simple word, one syllable word, extreme, that hardcore, that was just insane, you know. And what are the main chants that you hear from ECW, and the main chant that has followed throughout sports entertainment? Holy.
That is true. Nick, what comes to your head when you hear the words ECW?
Usually a montage of all the crazy, high, you know, dramatic spots that the company tended to be known for, which is, you know, it makes sense because they were the first company to really take that kind of style and innovate it in the States. But usually a montage of all the spots and obviously the rabid crowd, that's usually what comes to mind when I think of ECW.
That's a good one. When I hear the term ECW, I think the most extreme hardcore wrestling that has ever been around. Due to the fact when you go there live, well, when you went there live, being the fact it's not around anymore, you were always at the edge of your seats, just knowing something extreme was going to happen at any given moment. Sal, question for you before we start talking about the rise and fall. If ECW was still around, do you think it would be in great competition with WWE?
I think indeed. I mean, the way that I think ECW would probably be the way that ROH is right now. Mm-hmm. Hell, even better. I think the way that the indies are like set up, ECW, if it was still around, it would have been one hell of a company. Regardless, I mean, you know, there was this issue of whether they were going to get the sponsorships, the TV deals, all that other stuff, and people for years told them, you're not getting it, because it was controversy after controversy after controversy, which eventually led them to fall. But I think that if regardless, if they had a little more time, if they had some more time, they would have lived on for, you know, a longer time. I think that they'd still be in business right now, you know, but that's all speculation for all we can say, you know?
Nick, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with that, because if you look at it, ROH and TNA were two companies that started the year after ECW folded, and ECW had a lot of, I want to say, influence on the, you know, on the in-ring styles and all the collaborations, you know, that went into ROH. Gib Sapolsky, you know, was the head booker of ROH and its, you know, in its incarnation. And he was a protege of Paul Heyman. And you could see, you know, the style in that, you know, very well, you know, within the hardcore style. And you had your, you know, submission, technical wrestling as well. ECW was a good mix of both of those things, a good incorporation of both styles that made for some really classic matches. A lot of the talent that came out, you know, we could have seen them on ECW. Who's to say, like, CM Punk, Samoa Joe, Christopher Daniels, AJ Styles, who knows where they would have been on the ECW circuit, you know, had they not had that platform. But maybe it was good for them at the same time, because they were able to stand out in smaller companies. But I definitely do think ECW had an influence on ROH and TNA and all the other companies that came out, you know, that came out and were known afterwards. I'd also point out CCW as well, Combat Zone Wrestling. Their style is very much like ECW was back in the day. But the thing is, ECW was, you know, they took that style of wrestling in a time where you didn't really see it happen. They were the Attitude Era, before the Attitude Era,
you know, it's funny that you actually brought up CZW, because that company just is like the poor man's version of ECW, in my opinion.
It's kind of ironic calling something a poor version of ECW. Not making a money joke, but it was kind of there.
But you understand what I'm saying, though.
Yeah, I get you.
It's just not as popular as them, as ECW was. But it's a very good comparison, though, being the fact that if you watch some of the highlights of CZW, you're just amazed at it.
I mean, when you... I mean, when you see, you know, CZW, especially at the time after WWE acquired ECW, you know, I think at that time, that's what they needed. I think that's what they needed to stand out from ECW. Because if you compare CZW, ECW, it had that same dynamic, but I think it was presented in a different fashion. Because when you see CZW, their main emphasis was on ultra violent. And they were coming up and trying to be innovative at that time. I think that's probably the best move for them, you know. I think that it's not the same thing as ECW, and probably will never be, because they can do as much innovative stuff as they can, but one thing that will always remain the same is that ECW started everything. ECW started all of that. They were the innovators of that, and all ECW is doing is just copying that and adding a little twist. Oh, light bulbs? Okay, that's new, but, you know, forever synonymous, hardcore wrestling will be attached with ECW.
That is true.
Definitely.
I mean, when we look back at the history of ECW, I mean, it started out as a independent territory from Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, from what I know. This is in 1989. But, I mean, you know, and then from there, it slowly evolved into Extreme Championship Wrestling, being owned by Todd Gordon. And this was under the banner of the NWA, which was, you know, the big alliance of different territories. And after a while, you know, they started competing with all the different territories, and then slowly other companies started branching out of that. But, I mean, from this session with, you know, NWA, does anything really stand out to you?
Not really. It's just because it wasn't as entertaining as it was when it was the Tri-State NWA. When it evolved into ECW with the originals, like Tommy Dreamer, RVD, Sabu, like the originals, that's when everyone knew about it.
What about you, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, not to say that it's early days weren't anything particularly memorable, but I would just say they were just sort of this run-of-the-mill independent company. You know, they were under the NWA umbrella. Eastern Championship Wrestling kind of sounds like a generic wrestling company name. Nothing really groundbreaking happening at the time, though Joey Styles, you know, had his start. He did some very good announcing in those days, but he wasn't the Joey Styles that he evolved into until, you know, ECW became ECW. But I would say the most memorable point of that was the turning point when, you know, Shane Douglas did the unthinkable, and I guess maybe you'll want to lead into that right now.
So we'll start a topic right now, then?
Definitely.
I mean, what else is there to really talk about the, you know, premature ECW, like Eastern Championship Wrestling? Like, nothing really, I mean, as far as us, you know, we're really born more than the 90s. We really were, like, you know, we really weren't that, you know, we didn't really follow ECWs that much from the beginning, you know. We didn't actually see. But is there really any footage out there that really, you know, that was really, really influential coming out from Eastern Championship Wrestling? I don't think, you know, probably the only major thing that was really influential was Shane Douglas, you know, disgracing the NWA belt by just throwing it and presenting the new belt. You know, so I think that's, you know, from the core, from his inner workings, from the premature stages, nothing really made them, like you guys said, you know, I agree that nothing really made them stood out, you know. But, I mean, you know, what did you guys feel after, you know, after that started?
Well, I don't mean to, like, kind of cut you off, but basically what the question you're asking will lead into one of our statements probably for the rise or the fall.
Well, I mean, no, we're actually, well, that started the rise, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes and no, but...
Well, why do you think that's the fall?
Like, it's hard to put your finger on one specific thing, but it's just like a whole generalization of statements that could evolve that one statement. If you understand what I'm saying. It's not just like one main thing. It's little things here and there that could get the answer to your question. The reason why I believe the rise of ECW happened was the talent and the way that Paulie Dangerously, which is Paul Heyman now, was booking the talent. The reason why I'm saying that is back in the 90s, 90% of the ECW talent, 90% probably would have been jobbers in WWF or WCW. Like, Rob Van Dam, he probably would have been a jobber in the 90s because WWF already had majority of guys under 6 foot, guys under 180 pounds who were high flyers. But I think it was the way that Paulie was booking the talent, which was a big plus on the ECW side.
I mean, when you look at all the talent, I mean, it's, you know, it's great what the impact that Paulie had on the talent. I mean, when you look at all the talent from way back, Taz, you know, being the barbaric dude, not being the badass, Sabu, being the unchained animal, to being the suicidal, homicidal, genocidal Sabu. And, I mean, when you see Tommy Dreamer, the pretty boy, turn into, you know, the young son of ECW. You know, it's true. The talent development, it was great. That's what probably led to their rise and them getting a lot of, you know, steam and, you know, energy. Because a lot of people gravitate towards that, you know?
Oh, and another thing, I didn't mean to, like, cut you off.
Yeah.
But also the relationships and the friendships that the superstars had with each other. It was like one big family. That was also another thing that helped the booking also, because they all knew how to work with each other perfect.
True. I mean, there was this brotherhood in the locker room where all the talent, they got along. They respected one another. They understood that they had to put out every little ounce of energy that they had, of blood, sweat, and tears, just for the enjoyment of the audience. And they were in unison.
Mainly blood.
Indeed. Yes, yes, they were. I mean, when you look at the names, you know, Terry Funk, big name. Let's talk about him for a little bit. You know, he started out from the NWA. He's, you know, old name, goes way back. And seeing him in that ECW, that new rebuilt ECW, you know, he really did have an influence. I mean, you know, a lot of people looked at him and said, oh, this guy is just the, you know, old broken down man. But he fit perfectly in there. I mean, you know, the things that he did, he was able to adapt. And to see that, you know, that was something that was crazy, because you can have all the old people, the old, you know, the old talent, and then bring them in and then morph them into the fabric of ECW.
He was even wrestling in 2006. He was at One Night Stand.
And he busted his ass for the fans. I mean, that's the main goal of every single wrestler in that locker room. Their goal wasn't to be on the stage of WrestleMania. Their goal wasn't to be on the stage, you know, to entertain millions and millions of fans just to get money. Their goal was, okay, we're going to deal with this. We're going to have our show here, and we're going to put on one heck of a night right here for the fans, for their enjoyment. And that's why I think that, you know, that connection developed, you know. But what can you guys speak on the connection of ECW and the fans?
Well, obviously when you have a show in the same arena, you're going to get the same people coming out, and more or less that could be a bad thing, but it can also be a very good thing. It worked in this case for ECW, because if you noticed, the crowd had a lot of familiar faces. People like routines, you know, when they're watching TV. They like to feel comfortable. They like to know what's going on, and when you watch an ECW show, when you look into the crowd, you know exactly who's there. You had the Straw Hat guy, you had Sign guy, Tie-Dye guy. It speaks volumes when you're able to point out individual members of the crowd, but at the same time, they also added their own factor. You're going to tell me Sign guy didn't entertain you? They even based a character off him later on as the company developed. Straw Hat guy was always there. And then the crowd was always loud and vocal, too. When something happened, they didn't like it, they let you know.
Oh, they let you know big time.
Yeah.
Loyalty. Right? Loyalty.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's like Nick said, with Straw Hat guy and Sign guy. Now we have Brock Lesnar guy. We have the people who dress as the Legends. We have the black guy who had that one amazing face when the Undertaker streak was broken.
Angry Miz Girl.
Angry Miz Girl, I forgot about her. She was hilarious. Every sport has that one group of loyal fans. Like the Yankees, they have Bald Vinny.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets, they had Fireman Fred. You always have that one person who sticks out that everyone knows, no matter what sport it is.
I think ECW, the thing that made them stand out and that contributed to their rise was that connection to the fans. You know, they were welcoming every single fan and making them a part of the show. WCW didn't do that. WWE didn't do that as much. Because whenever something happened, they were very, very one-sided. They were very, very, okay, we got to do and under our control. But whereas ECW, you had people going in the crowd giving in certain props to the wrestlers to hit the other wrestlers with. And it made it the person feel interactive, you know? Rich, you were at an ECW show, weren't you?
Yeah, when I was younger, I went to quite a few.
What was your experience like that for? You know, like, how'd you feel being in that? You know, did you ever feel interactive?
Yes.
As opposed to a WWE show? Like, how
much,
would you?
Much more interactive due to the fact Sandman basically was almost within arm's length of me. And Sabu, he did the triple jump, where he jumps off a chair onto the ropes to the barricade. He was within 15, 20 feet of me. It was amazing.
Did you feel connected?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
But the energy, I mean, that might have contributed, right? Because everybody was sharing the same, energy. They were walking in there saying, okay, they're watching a good show, and they felt that connection, right? Where everybody was all interconnected into one. The fans, the people in the ring, the bookers, everybody, the commentators. Everybody in that whole arena was connected.
Yes.
Right?
100%. They connect with their fans more than probably any sport you could think of.
I mean, when you see the one-night stand, that crowd was, you know, crazy. And, you know, I mean, years after they went out of business, you kept hearing, you know, ECW chants. Hell, even now, you hear ECW chants, ECW chants. You know? I mean, that's just another testament to what they, you know, what they've done and their legacy. They're, you know, that's how they rise, probably, you know? I mean, when you see, you know, all they've done on the corporate side, they've had sponsors, they've had action figures, they've had you know, they've had different kinds of
they had video games, they had DVDs.
Not very good video games, but
that is true. But they still had it though.
Hardcore Revolution, that was, oh my god.
And the graphics. All the kids are telling that these days, but I mean, at that time, you know, that's what you needed to stand out, to say, okay, who is that? Like, what company is that? I never heard of that before, to get some exposure. But, I mean, now, you know, especially with sponsors, they kind of did some stuff that was, you know, over the top and borderline, you know?
Even the TNA game, even though it had good graphics, yes, I actually watched footage of the TNA game. It was horrible.
I mean, when you seen it, you're like, oh, wow, this is cool. And then when you get it, it's like...
I didn't even buy it. I just saw gameplay in a store. Really? I was like, wow, I was completely wrong about that one.
We can applaud ECW, though, for being one of the first companies to come out with a video game. Albeit yes. Not very good, but you know, in the 90s, it was one of the first games, you know, to come out on a main console, PlayStation 1, you know, big at the time. Hardcore Revolution probably didn't garner many sales, but it was good to have as an alternative option.
As a kid, you were probably saying, it's a cool game, as a kid. But then as you got old, you're like, what was I thinking back then?
Basically.
Nick, what is your opinion on the rise? Like, what do you think triggered the rise?
Okay, well, I'm going to point to exactly what made ECW, ECW, the branding, the imaging. One man in particular captured this with every match. For most of the company's run, he was on his own, bringing you the show, leading segments, talking during matches, if you get what I'm saying. I'm going to point to the one and only Joey Styles. He captured that ECW spirit perfectly. He knew how to lead a match. He knew how to lead a segment. He had his own opinions, which he... I'm not going to say he shoved it down the viewer's throat, but he knew how to draw out feelings from viewers. You know, if something was despicable, he voiced it. If something... Well, he didn't really have a lot of sweet moments in ECW in terms of emotion, but, you know, if something went on that was cool, he stood right behind it. For God's sake, he was one of the original catchphrases of accepting a wrestling spot, which was, oh my god, you know?
That is just the best... That's one of the best lines ever.
No one can ever match that. And you had that before, you know, around the same time as, you know, the fans were chanting, holy, you know. But everyone's going to point to one of their favorite commentary catchphrases, and you'd be hard-pressed to not find Joey Styles in there. This guy knew how to talk. He knew how to sell. Sure, later on, towards the run, they gave him... Cyrus the Virus, we made for some interesting color commentary, I'll give it that, but when you think of ECW in its prime, which is kind of ironic saying in its prime, in that it never really, you know, had a creative fallout, like WCW didn't have a financial emergency, at least early on when it was growing. Like WCW came known to be. They didn't give their titles to actors. But when it came down to things, you definitely had the voice of ECW. And I don't know if ECW was going to have the same effect if it had a different commentator. Who knows what the product would have looked like if it was, you know, let's say a 2 or 3 man broadcast team. A 1 man show is exactly what made it different. That's exactly what ECW was meant to be, an alternative. It was doing everything different from everyone else, and that's where you could find a one-man commentary, enough to lead the show, sell matches, do what you gotta do, still enjoy the hell out of the show, and that's when I'll point to ECW's rise, was the exact branding and Joey Styles' commentary.
And also to add to that, Joey Styles always made the fans happy, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the way that Joey Styles, I think ECW's motto was always the same as it was. We don't want to insult our fans. We want to make our fans feel like they are informed, they're respected, and they know what's going on.
Like, they probably wanted their fans to be number one.
Not they, like, who wouldn't?
Yeah, they were. I mean, when you were part of that crowd, of course, you were number one. You were, you know, they were, you were the first priority. Everybody respected you. Everybody, you know, they, there was that mutual bond, that feeling, you know, that, okay, that we are in tune with what this is, you know, what's going on here.
Wait, Nick, if ECW was still around, you'll hands down put that on your website, ProWrestlingOpinion.com, right?
Oh, you mean the Pro Wrestling Opinion website? Definitely. Yes. You know, unfortunately, ECW is not around, but other companies are. WWE is obviously still around. TNA, ROH companies that came after the fall of ECW, we gladly cover them. We also have a near and dear respect for the indies, and we also cover New Jersey's Pro Wrestling Syndicate, which produces shows out of Rahway. They have an upcoming show August 22nd. Rey Mysterio is going to be there. It's going to be a huge show. They'll be coming to the Brooklyn area on coming up very soon. So just keep an eye out for that. And who can also forget Lucha Underground, which I think personally is the best thing going. But if you want reviews, previews, predictions, reactions, check out ProWrestlingOpinion.com. We got a lot of content. If you're if you like what you're listening to right now, we got past episodes. We also did an episode of the rise and fall of WCW, most underrated and overrated talent. We got a bunch of them. Feel free to check it out. We also got a couple of other shows we like to show on the website. We also got Fans Perspective, which comes from our other friends at Boneyard Productions. And we also have Booking the Territory podcast, which features wrestler interviews and insight on the past week in wrestling. We definitely have a lot right now with PWO. If you haven't checked it out, hop on board. You're going to be happy.
Well, being the fact this is the midway section of the podcast, Sal, I have a, well, this is a question for all three of us. I'm going to start with Sal. Sal, when you were watching ECW, who would you say was your favorite talent and your least favorite talent?
You mean least favorite and least favorite talent in ECW?
Yes.
In terms of what? In terms of ability, promo, charisma?
Just all around. Like, who would you say is the perfect ECW wrestler and the worst?
I think the perfect ECW wrestler in my mind, from the beginning even till now, I say was Bubba Ray Dudley. Because...
And your reason behind that?
Because when you've seen Bubba, especially now in the way that he's evolved, you know, I don't want to go into the detail of, you know, him and what he's doing now and all that, but, I mean, over time, wherever he went, you always saw something happen. You always saw something, you know, entertaining from him. And, you know, he was like the ringleader of that tag team, the Team 3D. I mean, no offense to D-Von. I love D-Von, too. I think their tag team was probably the best tag team ever. D-Von's really great, too. But I think that Bubba took the torch, and he led with it. When he left the ECW, when he was in ECW, he was leading it. When he left ECW, he was leading them. And when he went out into WWF, he said, okay, I'm going to represent ECW when I come here. And whenever he went, you know, he competed in a match in WWE, people looked at him and said, That is ECW. That is the embodiment of ECW. They probably looked at the tag team, but when you look specifically at him, he had that talent inside of him. And later on, you saw him develop as he broke out into his own character. And I think that if ECW gave him the chance, if he had won the ECW title, I think it would have been, you know, that would have solidified him as a great name and everything, you know. But, you know, over time, I think other people benefit from that potential that he offered and everything. As far as my worst, I wouldn't say anybody from ECW is really worst, because every part of ECW was developed. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a fitness major. I'm a personal trainer. I follow bodybuilding and stuff. When you see a bodybuilder, every single piece of their body is sculpted for a purpose. Just like ECW. ECW wasn't just a big fat piece of clay, and you had a little, you know, nooks and crannies here, and they're all, you know, messed up and all that. It was, everything had a purpose. Every part had a purpose. And Paulie made it so that every single person played an important role into ECW. And if you saw each and every person, they were perfected. They were chiseled. They were worked on until there was no limit for them. That's it. They were at their peak. So for that reason, I say there is no bad wrestler, I think, in ECW.
Nick, your opinion?
Yeah, I agree to that point with Sal about there not being a quote-unquote bad wrestler. I think it really speaks to the creative prowess that Heyman used when booking his company. He knew how to build a segment, he knew how to build a match, make you look forward to it on both sides. It's obvious when you have a match, you have a good guy, bad guy. Not to say there were shades of gray, but you could tell who was more over than someone else. They were the favorites heading in. I would say the least favorite was probably playing the heel. But I'm going to agree with Bubba, the pick about Bubba Ray, to some extent. Because if you followed the Dudleys in ECW, they have the most heat out of anyone in wrestling. I don't care like who you're going to bring up. If you're going to point to 1997, 1998, the Dudleys were like the top heel lead stable. I mean, you had Bubba, Devon, you had Big Dick Dudley, Joel Gertner. He used to lead the segments with the purposely annoying ring announcer voice. You had dances with Dudley. They just threw it in your face, and they were the first heels to really curse you out and threaten to fight you. There's a little video online that surfaced, you know, maybe a few months ago of an old Dudley's promo that took place in around the metro area, and they had one guy jump down from the barricade of this promo because they had the fans so riled up and so angry that he came down, he literally jumped from the top of the balcony down to the lower level to try to fight them. He wasn't successful, but just to garner that kind of reaction out of the fan tells you how good of a heel you must be to make people so angry that they don't even care, you know, they're going to jump the barricade no matter what. As far as Bubba individually, I feel like he and Devon had more of an impact as a tag team when they came to WWF in September of 99. You know, they were one of the new faces that were featured on SmackDown, which was debuting at the time. They helped to really make the hardcore movement mainstream. Bubba had a real obsession with putting women through tables. I'm not sure if that's some kind of sexism storyline, but it was intriguing, slightly entertaining. As far as who I'm going to go with my best, I'm going to point to a guy, you can look at him now and still think of ECW. I'm going to point to Tommy Dreamer. This guy was the heart and soul, arguably, ECW. He fought from the bottom, worked his way to the top. He still works a hardcore style. He owns a hardcore style promotion right now called House of Hardcore. They try to, you know, it's sort of like an ECW reunion show. Use a lot of talent from that era. This guy just, you know, he fought his heart with every match. His promos from his ECW days were really good. I feel like that's something that's very underrated about Dreamer, is his promo ability. He knew how to use it in ECW. That's what made him one of the top faces. And then his in-ring style was unlike any other in terms of being a brawler. He was just like the all-around guy to push, and you know, you would build a company around someone of that stature. We can applaud Heyman for that one, because we could still attach Dreamer and ECW together.
That is true. My pick. My pick for the least favorite talent, just for the fact that I don't think he was really that good of a wrestler, and his promo skills were just plain horrible in general. The Sandman. Like, just for the fact the few shows that I went to, he was just sloppy.
I don't mean to cut you off, but I'm going to disagree with that one. I think the Sandman style was purposely sloppy. He was meant to be the beer... He was the original beer-swirling badass before Stone Cold ever came around. Obviously, they made that mainstream in the Attitude Era, but Sandman was the first guy to really walk around. If you remember, he had woman next to him. You know, he would just look at the camera with a perfect brash look. He didn't care who he was fighting. He would take that beer can, bash it against his forehead, bust himself open, come out to enter Sandman. The crowd would go nuts. This guy had he had his own thing. That's what made him him. Not to say, you know, his style, I would say, has drawn some influence nowadays. I look at a guy in NXT like Baron Corbin. Not going to say he's a toned-down Sandman, but the way he carries himself is very much like the Sandman character.
And my pick for the best talent? I don't know if he's technically still around because he hasn't been on TV in a while. Mr. Pay-Per-View, Mr. Monday Night, the Tuesday Night Delight, the whole effing show, Rob Van Dam.
He still makes appearances every now and then. He fights on the indies. But I definitely would agree with that.
He was just pure amazing talent for that time. Like, who else in the 90s would throw a chair at you and hit you with a kick as the chair is being caught by you? It's just, he was just amazing at his time in the 90s.
I mean, sorry to cut you guys off. But yeah, I think there was a lot of comparisons, especially at that time, because the big actor at that time was Jean-Claude Van Damme. You know, big dude, fit guy. He was like a, you know, dojo kind of guy. And Van Damme, Rob Van Dam, kind of brought that in a little bit into wrestling. And that was kind of interesting. I mean, you know, the way he could high fly and stuff, it was never seen before. It was interesting.
Especially with the Van Terminator, the move where you're in the corner, he grabs a chair and jumps from the other side of the ring and lands right in your face with the chair. That was just a ridiculous move, someone doing that in the 90s in wrestling.
Indeed, it was. I mean, we've just talked about the best and worst, you know, what we thought of the wrestlers. But I think we should focus on probably the fall. So, you know, there was many different things that caused the fall of ECW. I just want you guys to, you know, try to briefly, you know, as we're wrapping up, to show, you know, to tell us about what you think brought about the fall, you know?
Okay.
Because, I mean, I'll start right now. You know, from what I think, what really brought the fall for me was Mass Transit Incident. I don't know if you guys have heard about this. The Mass Transit Incident was where New Jack, who I think is probably a great guy on the mic. I don't give a shit what you're talking about, any kind of interview. He is hilarious. I don't give a crap. Like, but he's a psychotic, crazy man. Like, he's crazy with this. He supposedly was a kid, 17 years old, I think at the time, or 18, something like that. He was underage. And supposedly he just walked into the ring, you know, thought, okay, fine, I'll wrestle the match. Somebody called out. I think it was Axel Rotten, I think, something like that. And, you know, this kid supposedly from the crowd said, all right, I'll wrestle. So he wrestled, and the next thing you know, he was in the middle of the match, and he took some really bad bumps and, you know, injuries. He suffered some severe injuries to the point where they bled him. I think New Jack stabbed him or something. He stabbed him with a fork, I think, or something. Really, something really sharp, and cut his head open. He was bleeding, all that, loss of blood. Took him to the hospital. Kid died like a couple of days later. You know, I think something like that makes sponsors, people, you know, TV personality look at that and say, you know, we got to pull this off because this is becoming something serious. You know, and I think that's what really brought them down to a, you know, downhill, because from there everything just crashed. You know.
Freaking with that, along with my pick, as far as the mass transit incident, I believe it was from 96. I'm not sure if the kid died, right away like that. I think he was, you know, injured for a long time. You can always look that up on Wikipedia, but we're gonna focus on the incident in of itself. You can pretty much blame him for knowing he was working underage in an environment against a guy who was probably not looking out for your best interests in terms of a match and how to properly show it. New Jack is crazy. Yes, he's a really good promo, but he tends to be very careless in the ring. I don't know if you remember that other time he shoved the guy off the scaffolding onto, like, 40 tables. He was deliberately trying to push him, you know, onto the floor and try to miss the tables completely. This guy, you know, if he has a beef with you and you have an extreme match, he's going to try to use those stipulations to his own personal agenda, but that's neither here nor there. You could probably say both parties are at fault. New Jack for working him so roughly, and the kid, obviously, for taking part in something he obviously knew was going to have severe repercussions either way. Not to mention, he wasn't trained to be a wrestler, which would lead to injuries very, you know, more quickly. But Mass Transit was in 1996, if I believe. That was still ECW's heyday. Not saying they were, like, known nationally, but they were starting to get built up as an alternative. Once the deal was struck with McMahon, Vince McMahon, who actually lent Heyman money at the time, when in the whole 1997 invasion, you know, / takeover thing, they were kind of doing some cross promoting, you know, teaming up against WCW, which was cool to see at the time, which made for some interesting programming. But when it comes to the fall of ECW, it's obvious from a creative standpoint, there was not going to be a fall. You need money to run shows, and when you run out of money, and if Heyman had just kept better track of his financial records, we would still have an ECW. But I would say what did them in was probably the TNN TV deal. When you looked at the deal originally, it looked to be very good for the company. Who wouldn't turn down national TV coverage? It was something new for them. They had a new look to it. They were able to bring that product to more eyes. granted, it wasn't a very good time slot. And ironically enough, WWF ended up taking over TNN after, you know, ECW was driven out. But the company, the network, didn't really give the company a lot of chances to succeed and kind of pulled the curtain out from underneath them and kind of ruined their image to a point where they could not score another national TV deal. And, you know, the financial struggles only got worse from there on out. So what looked like was going to be the breakthrough for ECW really ended up being the downfall. Some of the storylines out of there probably weren't the best. They did work in a lot of quote-unquote network storylines, probably as a metaphorical representation of a villain, because they didn't like the network, and they let the network know it. But, you know, when you're a developing company and you come across a national TV deal, you tend to shut out any other, you know, any warnings or red flags. ECW went full force with it. Who's to say, like, you know, had they held out for something better or more suitable for them, we could have still had them running. But the national TV deal is what ultimately led to more financial struggles, and less than a year later, the company folded. So, you know, I bet you anything, Heyman wants a time machine to go back and not ink that deal.
That is true. But the incident you were talking about with New Jack and throwing the guy off the scaffold, the guy's name was Vic Grimes.
Yeah, Vic Grimes, that was it.
New Jack wanted to kill him.
Yes.
Because in a interview in like the early 2000s, I believe, he said he had all intentions of killing this guy. So he figured, throw him off a scaffold about 60 feet in the air, put him through, if I'm correct, it was 26 tables he set up. And he wanted to miss the tables and throw him onto the concrete right outside the ring.
Yeah, he wanted to miss the tables completely from what I understand, which would pretty much paralyze you at the least.
Or death, depending how you land.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, Sal.
I mean, when you talk about New Jack, another thing, plus this was very common with a lot of wrestlers. I mean, they kind of made that problem with bouncing checks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, he's been on multiple interviews talking about how Paul dodged a lot of checks, you know, he didn't give him his money and all this crap, and, they, you know, he was under the WWE payroll at the same time while running ECW, and then later on they did admit about that. They did admit that they were working in WWE in some form or fashion. Do you think that might have brought a little bit into it, you know, trust-wise and all that?
I don't know, to be honest. But if you watch the shoot at the beginning of the 2005 One Night Stand, I believe, when Raw and SmackDown invaded the One Night Stand pay-per-view, Paul Heyman even said to JBO, who said, Mr. Bounce Checks Paul Heyman, it wasn't bounce checks. It was the company had no money. Because Paul said it, because I have the Rise and Fall of ECW DVD, Paul said none of the checks bounced. They just cashed them at the wrong times, when the company had no money. Because Paul even said the company was lacking money at certain points of it.
I would have actually break in with a future suggestion for a future episode. We could actually talk about the One Night Stand and the whole quote-unquote WWE-CW era. because there are a lot of faults with that as well. You know, it eventually ended up coming into the brainchild that is NXT right now, but everything that started was with that, you know, quote-unquote reincarnation of the company, and, you know, I think it would make for an interesting future episode. Just saying.
I'm down with that.
I'm down with that, too. I mean, that's very interesting. It's a very interesting dynamic. Tommy Dreamer put it the best way. He said, ECW, after when WWE tried to resurrect it, was basically WWE is a stepfather, ECW is a child. I mean, ECW is the, I think, the mom. And then basically, no, he's a child. And then next thing you know, they brought him in and said, no.
Weird-ass family.
It said, no, this is from, I think it was from, I think it's Paul Heyman DVD. Where he was talking about how whack ECW was in 2006.
The resurrection was horrible.
Yeah, I mean, this Tommy Dreamer put it the best way. He said that ECW at that time was like the stepchild, and WWE said, no, you got to work in my... It was like the father saying, you got to work in my parameters because you're living with me now, and, you know, da-da-da. And it was true because at that time, it became fully blown corporate. You had pay-per-views, everything was running smooth, but the product was just turned to shit because everybody says this is not the same thing.
Well, that leads to my reason for the fall. The lack of promoting, the lack of advertisements towards the end of, like, the last 4 years. Like, yes, understand that you want to stay in the tri-state, but they needed funding to travel. Because if they would have went worldwide, or even countrywide, they would still be around. Because that will bring in money to the company.
It's a valid point. I mean, if but I disagree on the point that if ECW is still around, would it still go worldwide? I doubt it, because the way WWE is, it's become a global phenomenon because it touches every single part of the audience. Old people, children, women, men, everything, you know. Whereas ECW at that time was just the X-rated, you know, Attitude Era-esque promotion where everything was, you know, not for kids, you know, where it was after the kids went to sleep, it was after, you know, after hours, late nights, all that, you know. But WWE, you know, I think they if they were competing with them, ECW wouldn't last internationally. From an international standpoint, you know, but I mean, you know, if they had the possibility, I think they could have done something better, maybe reached a better audience. But at that point, I think that it would be the same thing as ECW 2006, where everybody just said it's not the same ECW. We're not buying into this, you know.
Yeah, I would actually say something, you know, coming adding to that. One of the things that made ROH, you know, Ring of Honor, break out on its own was the fact that it did start out based on the northeastern United States environment on the map. They used to run shows just basically out of the Murphy Rec Center, I think it was called, in Philadelphia. And then they slowly made their way to New Jersey at the Rexplex. I attended my first ROH show in 2004. CM Punk versus AJ Styles was on that card. I think it was called Best in the World, ironically. At Our Best. At Our Best was the name of the show. You know, you really had that independent feel. ROH began to branch out, going, now they're all over the country. And, you know, they've had a few trips to Japan, here and there. They've been all over the world, so I think where ECW failed to really become a worldwide entity is kind of where other smaller companies are, you know, taking that risk, and it's paying off for them.
Nick, ROH is coexisting with NJWP, right?
Exactly. Well, they have a working deal for talent exchange. I don't know how long it's going to last, but both companies are definitely benefiting from it.
Yeah, because I saw that in a couple episodes they had the New Japan champions wrestling the ROH champions.
Yep, Global Wars. It's what the whole concept was based off of, ROH versus New Japan, which is basically great for everyone. Who knows if, you know, what would have happened, ECW had that kind of thing, been able to come about working a hardcore style, no less, you know. This is all just fantasy, but, you know, back in the 90s, this would have been something really nice, really special.
It would have been something different for fans to see.
Yeah, that's one of where WCW first, you know, became, you know, they had a real rise in having working promotion deals with AAA, and ironically enough, I think New Japan, you know, they brought in talent from there to really diversify their roster. That they're like the first mainstream company to really take notice of it. But I think that's a part of what made ECW ECW, was the fact that it stood loyal to what it was doing, more or less. And, you know, that's what made ECW ECW. Adding on to that, you know, who could really say what's going to happen down the road with ROH? The company is growing, definitely. I don't know what's going to happen with the whole Destination America deal. They just lost the 8 p.m. time slot. Now they're at 11 p.m. Ironically enough, I think 11 p.m. is more suited for them. But, you know, you kind of see ROH as, you know, the little engine that can. Because they started right after the fall of ECW. So I think ROH is a good metaphorical representation of what would have happened to ECW had it still been going on to this day.
That is true. Being the fact we both, all three of us, did our rises and our falls, is there anyone who wants to have like a closing statement about ECW?
Yeah, when it comes down to it, ECW is a hardcore style, bunch of weapons, a rapid crowd. You had your people in the audience who came out to mostly every show. The talent was in it to turn on a really good show, all around. Joey Styles knew how to lead it on commentary. He had some really good promo guys as well. It was just a well-rounded company, backed by a creative genius, more or less. And if it wasn't for financial struggles, this company would still be around, and they never had a creative downfall, or, you know, they never had fans tuning out. Even in 2001, they had some really good matches, even though they were around for 3 months that year. It was still creatively at its peak. ECW is always going to be one of those examples of quote-unquote what could have been. Because you never know how much it would have grown. WCW had gone out of business too, and not going to say ECW was in number two position, but they were right behind WCW. They could have taken that spot. They could have really grown on further. But alas, all will ever be is just rumors and speculation. And I think I'll close it out with that.
I mean, you guys are right. You know, ECW was a great promotion. It brought a lot of different elements to it. Something very innovative, something new, something that always brought something, you know, to the table that was different, that set something apart and said, okay, we are something different. We're not the same thing. And what I think the main point that they had was, we're wrestling. We're not sports entertainment. We're not your Saturday morning show. We are sports. We're not, you know, we are wrestling. And I think they stayed loyal to that. They made deals. They made all these different, you know, these partnerships with different companies. They were willing to do that. And I think, you know, that's healthy for the business. If you see different kind of promotions right now, I think that's, you know, in my opinion, overall, I mean, someday we might have a topic about WWE and the indies or something like that, you know, possibly. But I think, you know, the healthiest thing that, you know, I think if WWE were to fall right now, eventually they will, I think, would be that the lack of building connections with other promotions. I mean, now they're doing it with NJPW with, you know, Liger coming to Brooklyn. But, I mean, that's as far as going to be appearances. Like, what about talent exchanges and all that? Are they really going to have that? You know, there's nothing, you know, we can say. But I think ECW was able to, they had that, they lived by that creed and motto saying, we'll do anything to grow. And they solidified that. But, I mean, you know, we discussed the rise, we discussed the fall, we discussed ECW as a promotion, its history, what's happened, you know, all the incidents that have occurred, the controversies, their, you know, their ups and downs. But, you know, I mean, we've also had a post on the rise and fall of WCW recently. If you can check, you can check on our RSN YouTube channel. And, you know, we're going to close up right now by saying, you know, visit the YouTube page, continue to, you know, see our Facebook page, you know, follow us on the different social media sites that we have. Be sure to check out Pro Wrestling Opinion, and also check out the next video that we're going to make, possibly something interesting, you know, especially what's going on with wrestling right now. SummerSlam's on the way. A whole bunch of stuff is going on. There's an influx of stuff coming in wrestling. For that, we'll see you guys out.